Hey, Gopu, how are you?
Hey, I'm good, Zane. How are you?
I'm doing well. Busy. It's a busy time of the year, getting ready for the holidays. So
I know. I'm quite waiting for all the Christmas lights and Thanksgiving and all that going on. Yeah.
Yeah.
How's Dallas?
Do you have any plans for the holidays? Like,
I think I'll go. Usually for Thanksgiving, we go to be with our friends in Houston.
Okay.
And Christmas, we host a party at the
Oh,
home.
that's
So.
fun.
Good.
Yeah, that's
Lou,
fun.
what are your plans?
My parents and my in-laws are out of the country for the holidays, so we're gonna go visit my brother. My brother lives in
Oh,
Tennessee, so we're gonna drive out there. So
nice. How many days?
just the last part of the Thanksgiving break. You know, we
Okay.
still have some stuff. Kids are in school, blah blah blah. But just drive out there. I think they're in school, we're in school, so trying to make a quick trip out of it. And then we come back and it's finals right when we come back, so it's kind of a abbreviated break, but it'll be good.
Alrighty. So what do we have today?
So today we're going to talk about a field that my lab has kind of transitioned into, and it's this concept of neuroengineering is what I've defined it. I call my lab a neuroengineering lab. So I thought I'd
Okay.
introduce it today and talk a little bit about a little bit of the history of the field, what it means. Like, there's some specific differences between, niche aspects of the field. So I thought we could kind of get into it. It's kind of fun, kind of kooky, kind of crazy.
Very sci-fi, I must
Very
admit.
sci-fi.
Very Dune. It reminded me of what is it? When I was reading some papers, it reminded me of that guy coming down, wearing all the things connected to his brain, just lowering down, floating. Yeah, that's
Oh
what it
yeah.
reminded me of.
Like the Borg? Do you watch Star
Pretty
Trek?
much. No, I. Yeah. Tell me. So what's going on here?
So I've kind of started doing this when I give scientific talks, is I define my lab as a neuro engineering lab.
Okay.
And I think that's different than neural engineering. And I think some of
Okay.
this just may be me, right?
Okay.
But I see it as two clear distinctions. And so I thought what we could do is talk about both of them because they're both pretty fascinating.
Alrighty.
So neural engineering, I think, is the traditional sense of it. And I say traditional meaning, like, when I say neural engineering, most people think of like Elon Musk. Let's connect your brain to the internet, the Matrix style. And that's what neural engineering is. I think that's what I define it as. Neuro is a little bit different in that it's using stem cell approaches to build and engineer tissue, right? So I see it as like
So
a branch off of tissue engineering, but specific for the brain.
basically, you're going from Elon Musk to RFK Jr. Yeah,
So,
tell.
and I think really what we can kind of dive into today is the goals are different, right?
Sure.
Not just the science, but the goals are different. And so with neural engineering, like the computer thing, this is what you may have heard of, this the brain computer interface. This is developing technologies, computer chips that can be transplanted into a brain that can read neural activity, that can control something, right? So that's neural engineering. I think that's the traditional, more popular sense of it. And I am the neuroengineering, which is the focus, is to regenerate the neural tissues, whether it's the brain, whether it's the spinal cord or peripheral neurons. That goal is, to me, fundamentally different. So the
So
background is just.
would you describe it as any technology that would aid in regeneration of brain tissues?
Exactly. So
Okay.
yeah. So I think historically, this has been around for a while. The history of the neuroscience field has done a lot of these. Back in the 50s, people could get away with the craziest experiments, right? Some of them, they're like transplanting eyes into other organisms, so you can get like
Yeah.
cloned frogs and stuff. But the heart of it was to understand the regenerative capacity of the nervous system. And I think, from my understanding, or my interest in this, is that the nervous system does not regenerate. The central nervous system, the peripheral nervous
Yes.
system does. And so the brain and the spinal cord, once injured in a traumatic brain injury, or a spinal cord injury,
Yeah.
it's injured. It doesn't repair itself. And so the
Yes.
goal of this neuroengineering is to develop some approach to help facilitate that regeneration. Right.
And so, in which context could this be used?
What do you mean? So, like in spinal cord injury,
Yeah, so
spinal
other than
brain injury,
injuries, yes.
stroke. Yep.
Okay.
So there's
Okay.
permanent loss of that tissue.
Okay.
And so some of the goals are to re-establish the connections that were lost. If it's a neural system, right, you've lost some sort of function, reconnect them, replace and reconnect those tissues. So spinal cord injury is
So,
probably the most prevalent one because that is probably the most common in terms of devastating and debilitating accidents. And so, can we do something to that injury to help reconnect both sides to regain that function, right?
okay.
So this I see has kind of branched off into a couple of pockets, right? And so, and those pockets are approaches that they've used, okay?
Okay.
And it is a very tissue engineering based function. So a lot of these are engineering approaches. So the first is using biomaterials to replace that injured tissue, right? So for example, if it's a spinal cord injury, you've got a lesion in the spinal cord that prevents you from controlling, for example, you're paralyzed. You can't control your muscles. If you could reconnect those pathways from the brain down to your muscles, then you can regain some of that function. That's the goal. And so there's a bunch of these biomaterials. So a biomaterial is like something that it's a biological substance that could be transplanted into your body that can do something, right? The body's okay with it in most cases. It's not harmful, but it can replace, reuse. And so some of these examples are like things called hydrogels. So these are gels that are based out of water. They're kind of squishy. They're like jello, right? They jiggle around, they wiggle around.
Yeah.
But the idea is they're kind of a scaffold for what could be used. And I think with this biomaterials approach, it's like, can we build a scaffold to refacilitate the growth of that injury, right? So hydrogels are probably one of the main ones because a lot of these are really accessible.
So,
And
in which context is hydrogel used? So, I mean, keeping this neuroengineering side aside, like, do we have any other use for hydrogels?
oh,
So, what is
sure.
the per yeah? What do
Yeah,
they
so
use them
I mean,
for?
hydrogels are used for they're in food additives.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Right. I mean, these are a lot of these things. So we use some in the lab. One is and we will go to CVS and buy it over the counter. Because it's available as a dietary supplement,
Yeah.
right? I mean, people have used these for all sorts of goofy reasons, right? But
Oh, I see. Yeah.
it's just a polymer. It's a compound that exists either in plants or in animal cells that can be extracted, isolated, and then reconstituted, right?
So how can this, I mean, sure, there are many examples, and hydrogel is one among the many examples, right? So let's say, how can this be, like, in a theoretical world, how can this be neuroengineered to let's say, tackle or to provide some kind of, like, an easy way to brain injury or whatever? So how can
Yeah,
we use
so
this?
I think the idea is with all of these biomaterials is this is injected into the injury site. So if there's a
Ah.
spinal cord injury, right, you've got these long nerves that are cut in half. And the challenge is that the damaged nerves need to grow through that injury site and reconnect to the other side. And
Oof.
in the theory is that if you replace it with something, one of these biomaterials, you can help facilitate that movement. It can kind of serve as like a highway to travel to reconnect to the other
Is
side.
it like plastering your arm when you break your bones just to,
Kind of. It's not
okay.
necessarily like supporting it. What it's doing is providing the scaffold.
Ah, I
And
see. Okay.
so there's a couple of approaches. The bio hydrogel is one of them. You can also use what they're called is so you can use nanofibers, nanoparticles. There's a couple things called decellularized tissue scaffolds. The concept is you've got this thing that gets laid down, this mesh, this net, this conglomeration of different proteins is what it ends up being. And that's really facilitating and rich for cell growth. And so then the cells can then grow through that. A lot of what happens with injury is you get this scarring occurring, and that prevents the regrowth of this. And some of the goals of these biomaterials are one to provide a scaffold for regrowth, but then you can also, what a lot of people have tried to do is like mix it in with other compounds, like other molecules that may break down the scarring to fill it in, or to promote more growth. It's like steroids are added to it to like ramp up the growth of those injured cells, right? So that's kind of one of the big areas for tissue engineering. The other one is going to be like stem cell engineering and organoids. So that's what my lab primarily focuses on. And so instead of providing just the scaffold, let's also provide the cells needed in that injury site.
Before going, could you explain, like, what is an organoid?
Sure. So the concept of using these stem cells is that we can take a cell that can turn into any cell in the body. It can turn into heart cell, bone cell, skin cell, brain cell. It can turn into different types of brain cells. And so essentially what we've done is kind of, you can think of it as like a small little tiny brain-like structure that already wants to be a complex neural tissue, right? It's engineered to be that. If you can put it in there or do something with it, right, that helps facilitate this thing, kind of like the biomaterials. You've also not just got the highways involved, but you've got the cars on the highway that can help move those signals along, right?
So it's pretty much like you take one cell, a stem cell, and you divide it and make it a different kind of cells, and you kind of form an aggregate of that, is it?
That's right. So it
Okay.
becomes like a three-dimensional, it's an aggregate of cells.
Organoid, is it like
Yeah.
kind of organ?
Yeah.
Okay.
So organoid means it's like a little tiny organ, right? And there's all
Okay.
sorts of organoids. There's heart organoids, which are kind of cool. Like they actually will contract and beat like a heart. There's pancreatic organoids, which they develop all the cells in the pancreas, and then they kind of start replicating the little function of that pancreas. There's vascular organoids, lots of different types of organoids.
And so, where do you get the stem cell from?
You can get them from a lot of different sources. There are companies and repositories online that
Okay.
can provide different types of stem cells, meaning that if you need, from a specific donor, you can find them. They've been donated to these repositories. Some of them are available for the, academic lab to use. Some of them are for purchase. It kind of just depends on these different. It's like a tissue bank, right? So
Oh,
you
I
go to
see.
the hospital, there's a bunch of these tissue banks that will collect different types of tissue. Blood, for example, would be one.
Brain is there, I guess.
Brain, if you've got a
Yeah.
brain, there's a lot of brain banks. If you need to study, patients with Alzheimer's, there's Alzheimer's banks. Same thing. A lot of times they will collect different
Stem cell
cells,
banks, is it?
and then you
Okay.
can create a stem cell bank. Yep.
Okay.
So that's kind of the tissue engineering version of neuroengineering, and then of course, the brain computer interface is the other side of things. So that's the Elon Musk. Let's put a chip in your brain and control something. And I think that's fascinating, because to me, that's such a difficult challenge, right? And so the goal of that is to develop an electronic device that can read brain function, interpret that brain function, and then have it actually perform through some computer what that region of the brain is supposed to do, right?
So pretty much then it's so brain computer interface is pretty much when you connect brain to a computer.
That's exactly right. Yep.
There you go.
So it's in engineering, I think it's one of the coolest engineering feats that we've accomplished for a couple of reasons. First, just the electronic side of it. I'm not an electronic engineer, but I'm imagining that that's very sophisticated, right? To be able to transplant a chip into somebody's brain, like that's such a
I have so many questions.
Right.
Yeah.
But then to just also be able to record the activity of the brain and know what that means. To me, that is the craziest part because, I mean, especially as a neurobiologist, I don't have a strong understanding of what that is. To know that a computer can decode it and then actually do what it needs to do is amazing, right? So, for example, I looked up like the first example, like one of the first successful approaches for this, right? And it's this guy named Matthew Nagle. Matthew Nagle was a spinal cord injury patient. So he had a pretty high, I think, a cervical level spinal cord, meaning he was paralyzed from the neck down. And
Wait,
he.
wait. Is it this Paris scientist? The one French scientist? No?
No, I think he's from the US.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah. I
Damn.
mean, there's been a couple of examples, but this was the one that made the headline news. So
Ah.
what they ended up doing was implanting a chip, and then he was able to play Pong, the video game, with just his mind. Right. And so this company, I think it was a US-based company, successfully transplanted this. And then he had to learn how to control, I don't know if you've played Pong, but it's like bink, bink.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not a sophisticated game, but what he was able to do was learn how to think about moving I think the paddle is what they call it, up, and then it like binks the ball. So he can think
The
about
guy.
it, and it then was able to execute it, right?
For all this, I'll have only one thing to say. It's like the government better make a regulatory agency for personal data and bioethics, really, because the level of sophistication that you are talking about, it's just. Combined with the AI, I'm scared, I must admit, because this is fantastic. This is all like, I'm surprised all this is happening in my lifetime, to be honest with you. AI, internet, this BCI, everything. But I genuinely feel like as much as this is wonderful, I think there should be more regulatory frameworks, or else we'll end up like those. Do you remember that scientist who tried to make the what is it designer babies the HIV
From the one from China that was
exactly
busted. I mean, I think that's a great I think it's absolutely on the forefront of this field as well as the ethical concerns, and I think with a lot of advancing technologies, especially with like AI, one of the things that we have to sacrifice is like privacy
Privacy.
and personal freedom. And so there's like this balance of comfort in terms of giving up some privacy. And I think what people don't recognize, this is like, I guess, a different tangent, but like we've already given up a lot of
Oh,
privacy,
yeah.
right? I get these emails from Google and it's like, hey, this is where you've been for the last 6 months. And it's like a map of everywhere. And I'm like, oh my God. I mean, I guess it makes sense. I put into Google Maps anytime I have to go somewhere. So, of course, there is documentation of where I'm going anywhere. But at the same time, like, that's pretty nice, right? Like, there's a
Yeah,
lot
but
of information that can come from that can be very beneficial, especially for people with like spinal cord injuries, where this type of understanding of how the brain functions, it cannot be possible without the use of some of these advances in
I
AI
agree.
and
So let me ask you then one question. So, in an ideal world where everybody's nice, everybody's kind, nobody does any shady shit. What do you think are the absolute merits of this BCI and also your neural engineering?
Yeah, so I think in terms of ethics, if you split them up into these
Neural.
two groups, neuroengineering,
Neural and neural, yeah.
the tissue engineering, and then the brain-computer interface, the tissue engineering side of things, I think has a little less ethical concerns. Mostly because we're just trying to reproduce a biological system that's helping, right? With the brain computer interface, I think there's a lot more ethical concerns in terms of boundaries that we need to be aware of, that we should or should not come close to, not even cross, but come close to. Right. And so for, I think depending on who you ask, right? So Elon, I think his vision is probably different than somebody like mine in terms of where this can go. His company is not necessarily out there trying to help paralyzed individuals motorize and control a prosthetic limb, right?
So you mean it depends on the question you're asking, the goals pretty much.
No, I
Is
don't
it?
even know if it depends on that. I think it just depends on, I mean, those are things that are going to be independent. Those are going to be developed independent of the technology, right? Meaning that as this, let's say this brain computer interface becomes more and more advanced, right? And so to be specific, right, what it has been very successful at right now is decoding what the motor cortex is doing. So the motor cortex is the part of the brain that commands voluntary movement. If you need to move a prosthetic arm, that is the part of the brain that we need to decode. I think that's a pretty understandable boundary. Let's get this as fast as we can so that people who need to control their legs and their arms that don't have voluntary control over those types of bodily functions can do so. When it then becomes something more than that, like how do we integrate memory? How do we integrate different levels of consciousness and emotion? That I think is going to have some boundaries that we need to be way more aware of, right? And so I think a lot of what's going on, we are at the very beginning of this technology. And so the motor
I
cortex is
agree.
like a successful adventure into it. But I think a lot of people's goal is to say, let's integrate our access to information so that we can have much quickly and readily available access to it, right? So think about like
So
the way 25 years ago, you had to look up information, that you had to be at a computer to do so.
yeah.
10 years later, we had phones that had all of that information, right? I see the interest in this area and this space in terms of like investors and technology drivers is that what if we then had the ability to access all this information even without a device, right? Say you can control your phone with just thinking about, so instead of saying, hey Siri, play this song, right? You just think, man, I'd like to play that song. And then it plays that song. I don't know if Siri just went off, but I think that's kind of to me, that's the sci-fi aspect of where that interest and the appeal comes from.
Zane, when you talk about access to information, I think we also need to talk about what kind of information is being recorded or accessed, like for example, like when you talk about signal acquisition from brain of all these devices, cells, whatever, are we going to record action potentials, calcium activity, like what are we going to record, from these brain? Because cell-to-cell communication is incredibly complex within brain, where there are so many different kind of cell who interact with each other in one way, interact with other type of cells in one way, and there are so many things happening in the brain, at any given point in any given context, for that matter. I mean, when you are looking at a wall and just zoning out. Your brain is on a different physical state versus when you're eating ice cream versus when you're drinking tea. So
So I think
what?
so right now it is recording action potentials. That is these chips. It's not looking at calcium spikes. It's looking at they're multi-electrode arrays implanted into the brain that's looking at patterns of these activities. And it's the pattern of those activities, to me, where as a neuroscientist that I'm fascinated about, it's understanding what those pattern of activities encode. If you say, I need to move this pong paddle up, you've got a population of neurons boop, 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 firing in a specific way that says, move this pattern up, right? And part of what it's doing using the AI is to entrain that to say, when this pattern goes off like this, we're intending this to go up. When it goes off like in another different pattern, that means move my arm out, like control the move the controller of this prosthetic arm to like grasp a cup or something. Like it's that type of function that it is measuring. And I think part of it is we're going to be limited to that in terms of the electronic technology, right? That's
For now.
for now, right? And I think that's part of where the next couple of steps need to go is understanding
And
once we understand those patterns and how they mean different things, what is it, does everything get encoded that way? And I don't think it necessarily does.
when you understand these patterns, can you humanize AIs? You know, there it's
Yeah.
so many things, so many things.
So, yeah, what do you
So,
think? What is, you said you've been doing some digging. What do you think about?
I have mixed emotions. It's like I can't. I'm not going to be that scientist who's going to say, "Oh no, this is all too new. This is got, you know, no," because every 5 years there seems to be like a scientific breakthrough, you know. And I think I genuinely think BCI and neuroengineering is going to get much more push from the scientific world and the society too. But that doesn't mean that it doesn't have concerns. You know, of course it has merits. Merits, the immediate thing that I could think was BCIs, this brain computer interface, can revolutionize brain imaging when it comes to what is it? Looking at tumors or any site-specific malformations in the brain, you know, brain tumors, like how do you diagnose this? How big is it? Where is it located? Or does it even have any aberrant activity? You know, that. And also, if we can develop targeted drug delivery system to reach a particular drug in a particular part of the brain to release such and such dose in such time, you can, what is it? You can, what is the word that I'm looking for? Well, you can customize everything like a personalized medicine. I think BCI will basically put a personalized medicine on crack, pretty much. It's going to explode. And that's good. That's absolutely good. But the concerns are, again, it's like when you put a foreign body in the brain, see, the brain is not going to be like, hey, come, let's be friends. You know, like what are the immediate responses to it? And a foreign body goes into the brain, all in all, a fundamental response is gliosis, right? So how is that going to be affected? We don't know. And also, again, brain is one of the least studied organ systems in the body, in my opinion. It's like 90% of the brain is just astrocytes. Oh, sorry, 80 to 90. Then you have tiny portion of neurons and tiny portion of microglia. We don't know neurons, yes, everyone studies neurons. Astrocytes and other type of cells, including blood vessels, cerebrospinal fluid, we just don't know. We just don't know. So the question is, it's like, are we making things about something that we don't even know? Like, are we jumping too ahead and are we reading too much into it? That's a genuine concern that I have. And also, like AI, for example, I'm already a bit icky about giving your blood or swab sample to a company to see what is your genetic, makeup, how even that. There are so much documentary. There are so many reports saying how that data can be used against you for your insurance, yada, 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 And that is just a gene sequencing. That's it. All in all, you give your DNA sample and they'll sequence it. This is you. This is you as a person. They can record literally inside your brain. And all these multinational companies, they are not torchbearers of liberty and equality. So when, and also these are the companies that is developing AI. So when you put all these pieces together, I genuinely do think there needs to be a board of regulatory agencies. A regulatory agency must be there to overlook all this. But if all the checks and balances are there, let's go ahead. I mean, I don't think any scientific ideas can be boxed up. That's not how ideas work. But as excited as I am, I would say I'm cautiously excited. There needs to be ethics. It's not devoid of any criticism, but we should go ahead. That's what I feel. What do you feel? And also on the line of that, you said you are using neuroengineering in your lab, right? So how exactly are you using this neuroengineering principles to look into traumatic brain injury?
So a lot of the same approaches that we've talked about,
Okay.
kind of surrogate bioscaffolds, kind of understanding what optimally do you need in a scaffold in terms of the composition of a scaffold that would facilitate, brain repair. Brain repair to the level that you get functional recovery. The history of regenerative biology, especially in the brain, is kind of fraught with misconception and fraud, and stem cell therapies kind of have a, there's a red flag associated with them for a reason. I think there's still a lot we can learn in that space. And so part of it is those basic questions, like, can we engineer, can we build tissues from scratch that can help? Essentially, is that if the brain can't do it, if your spinal cord can't do it on its own, then we've got to provide something extrinsically, externally, to facilitate that. That's kind of the big question.
Also, I've also seen, or I think you mentioned it some days ago. It's like we can also use this to selectively give neurotropic factors, in a specific region. And do you think that could be used to, like, now a lot of discussion is around aging of the brain, right? The brain aging and all. Do you think there could be neurotropic factors that could selectively put a different, for example, hippocampus, let's say, the region that's responsible for memory consolidation. Do you think targeted delivery could be an answer for brain aging or reversal brain aging for that matter?
I don't know. I mean, I bet it's been tried, right? So there's,
Has it?
I mean, there's a couple compounds, brain-derived neurotrophic factor, BDNF, that kind of promotes better brain health, right? It improves dendritic spine growth and neural function and brain plasticity. I know people have injected it all sorts of ways into everywhere. And it's very promising, right? But I don't know if it like prevents aging. So are you familiar with vagal nerve stimulation?
No, what is
So
that?
this is so the vagus nerve is one of the cranial nerves, cranial nerve number 10, right? I just literally had a lecture over it yesterday. So it's one of these cranial nerves, and it descends and has descending and ascending function. So it controls motor and it controls sensory input. Right. And it's a huge one that goes from the brain all the way down to the heart, for example. It's the main nerve of the autonomic nervous system that controls heart rate. There's a ton of approaches where they can put an electrode on it, and it's just a small incision kind of in the neck area where it runs, stimulate it, and send up action potentials to the brain. And there's a lot of really promising evidence with this. There's a lot of promise, I'll say that. I think there's still a lot of work to be defined, but they've looked at it in all sorts of aspects, neural trauma, psychiatric disorders where you can just stimulate it. And the idea is this drives this retrograde activity to the brain that stimulates all these systems. So like dopamine systems and serotonin systems that then just floods the brain with endogenous neurotransmitters. So you can kind of override some of these internal programs that you may be dealing with and then compensate for it, right? So like depression, just stimulate the vagus nerve a couple of times. It's just a small device, like a pacemaker that goes on the nerve. Stimulate it in a parameter, get this pulse of whatever you need, right? And you're good. So then it kind of goes a kind of gets around some of those transplant issues, scoliosis issues, and it's not super controlled, meaning that like you're just dumping the theories are just flooding the brain with whatever this neurotransmitter is. But there's a lot of interest and there's a lot of research that's trying to come out, and they've looked at a lot post-traumatic stress disorder, depression, stroke, traumatic brain injury, like ways to help facilitate and recover these things. So I think that's a kind of a neat promise. Lots that needs to still be done. So,
So where do you think the field is going?
I think there's a couple of things. First of all, can we reduce the invasiveness? Are there things we can do to stimulate? There's like cranial magnetic stimulation. There's deep brain stimulation. These are things that are pretty historically defined. People have been doing this for a while. They're becoming a little more popular because we have the technology to finally control it, right? And some of these are like epilepsy controls. It can detect, it can measure when that seizure's coming, stimulate, shut it down, prevent the seizure from coming, right? To me, those are like radical in terms of the improvement in how you can manage some of those
I agree.
issues, right? The nice thing is also that, like, in terms of privacy, it's just in a closed loop system. You're not like connecting yourself to the matrix. So there's some bonus with that too. I don't know. Watching some of these biotech companies that are interested in these BCIs, it does get a little wild with their goals, but at the same time, like, I know the challenge. I know it's hard, right? It's gonna be a challenge. And so.
You see, when I, think about what you just said, it's like I feel like all of a sudden, like within last 3, 4 years, I was just thrown into a new kind of interface. People are talking about spatial computing, the brain interface. You're talking about AI all of a sudden, and now every Apple and all the phone, they have their own intelligence. I feel like this is a different play field altogether. And all these technologies have been developing independently of each other. Like, it'll be nice to kind of know when they all kind of interlink and form an ecosystem, right?
I mean, to go back to your privacy comment, this is what I'm saying. Like, we don't have control over this. I don't have a voice in it. You don't have a voice in it. These are companies that are developing this technology. Whether we have input or not, our privacy is definitely going to be, we're going to love it, right? There's going to be a lot of these things that we're going to absolutely love and jump into and compromise our privacy for it. But at the same time, like, we're not going to have a voice to say whether we wanted that or not. It's
Fair.
moving so fast that I think it's happening, for better or worse, right? And we just have to hope that the people driving it are doing it for.
I think
Say that
it's,
just
I
thinking
think.
about who's like, it's Elon Musk that's I don't know if he's really in control of that company anymore, but
Well, let's not be sued. So
no, I mean, I think that company is, I don't even think of them. Neuralink is at one of the forefronts. No, they're still kind of developing. There's a lot of other really promising technologies that are through clinical trials that are FDA approved, right? That have already benefited people's lives. And I would much rather focus on those because I know the benefit, right? There's a lot of scary things that can be done. I do not want that to overshadow the tremendous help that a lot of this technology has already provided, especially with the brain control of prosthetic limbs, right? That to me is going to be, it has been, it's already been done, right? It is one of the best examples of this type of technology.
I agree, and I think that's a wonderful point to end this discussion, I guess.
Yeah, okay.
You're right.
So,
Yeah.
that was great.
I agree. It was a lovely discussion. I loved it.
Yeah, it was very
Scary, but loved
yeah.
it. I think, yeah.